right, this is Tom Rowe on the Saturday afternoon show here live from the Wave Farm in Acre, where it is 36 degrees according to the National Weather Service. And I am here with Justin Downs at the Wave Farm Study Center. And Justin has been here all week working on his Will of the Wisps installation. Am I saying it right? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's like the old Irish tale. Yeah, the Will of the Wisps that lead you into the bogs to drown. So yeah,
it's an Irish tale. Is that?
I think that's where it originated. Yeah, the they had, you know, because they have the banshee and different things, and Will of the Wisp was what they think now was the swamp gas releasing and catching fire and so forth, and so you'd see what you thought was a house or a lantern far off into the, and it would just draw you deeper and deeper into the swamp.
Into the swamp where you probably didn't want to go.
Yes, exactly. If you wanted to get home, you didn't want to go there. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Before we get too much into the Will of the Wisp, why don't you give the listeners a little bit of your background? You're an artist from, where are you from?
Well, I'm originally from Detroit. And I've been living in New York in the city for about 16 years. And I would say I'm an engineer instead of a. You guys are my only kind of real art outlet that I have going with this project. So I do.
You call yourself an engineer then?
Yeah, my work's more engineering. I do engineering and especially fabrication. So my devices that I've been building over the last 6 years are all very, you know, they're for, I've worked for UNICEF, I did remote solar installations for conservationists, I did, you know, just a bunch of very practical.
And solar is your focus, or is there a focus in there?
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of work with solar and then also GSM networks, so cell phone networks and things like that. Those are the two kind of large technologies that are reshaping a lot of in the U.S., but more so outside of the U.S. where grids weren't in place, where we didn't have all the copper wire. And so transmission, you know, cell transmission and so forth is huge in reshaping Africa and India and South America. They're actually way ahead of us in terms of their cell phone coverage and their cell networks.
Because the poor in Africa, I've read, it's the one expensive thing they have. They all have cell phones.
Yeah, everybody has a cell phone, everybody. And they also, they do all their banking through cell. They do market updates, just everything.
So it's a very useful tool in Africa, maybe in the way it's not as, it's more used, but for entertainment purposes, maybe in this country, and more as a useful tool that in Africa.
Yeah, exactly. Because they don't have any of the infrastructure, you know, the landlines or, you know, the land, you know, cable Ethernet or internet services or anything like that. And so it replaces, even it replaces good roads and highway systems, because instead of, you know, going to the market and spending 3 hours getting there, you check up through a text message to see if they have what you need. And so it's actually replacing, you know, our highway system too. So it's all because of that transmission broadcast that EMF pulse can travel much farther and cheaper than people or, you know, things like that.
Is it ultimately, are we not going to have wires and everything will be wireless?
Yeah, I would think so. Especially, you know, we've got, you know, what, 7 billion people now, and if we were to set up the same infrastructure that we have in the U.S. here with the copper cabling and so forth, we literally don't have enough copper in the world to run that amount of wire. And, you know, also just cost-wise, energy-wise, we're you know, on the downside of our kind of cheap energy of, you know, fossil fuels and the really good stuff. And so we're going to have to, you know, figure out how to keep these, you know, these structures going, these communication structures. And I think wireless is going to be, yeah, it's going to be huge.
And as an engineer, I read a lot of different things about the limited amount of bandwidth or the unlimited amount of bandwidth. Is it, are we going to run out of bandwidth? Like that we're going to run out of copper?
Uh, I don't know. I think, I mean, because bandwidth you can fudge and you can be smart, you know? So even, you know, the shift we have now from 3G to 4G and so forth, you know, the original cell network was a patch on top of a patch on top of a patch, and it was ridiculous. Like, when you actually start getting into the protocol, it's a little obscene.
4G solves that or clears it up?
Yeah, it's the LTE network. And so they started, that's why if you buy a cell phone, you need a whole new kind of chipset to, because it's like you said, it's on a different bandwidth. They blocked out a different section of the frequency channels. And then they're also doing different compression and time compression. I don't know how to say it quickly, but
I've been reading about sharing. It's like the frequency oscillates or something to cover each other or something.
Yeah, you can run three or four different data channels over the same frequency if you figure out a way so they don't collide. So the first cell phones, they blocked out, you know, you get, you know, whatever, 99.9, you know, and that was your frequency, and you had that whole thing to transmit a FM or, you know, basically an analog transmission. Now everything's digital, so you can send four different digital information streams over the same frequency because you're encoding and decoding on the both on both ends, and so you just filter out the other four channels you're not listening to.
And listeners might be aware of some of this because TV and radio stations both do this. There's digital channel 6 now. There's 6.1, 6.2, and 6.3. And like 6.2, they play old westerns from the 50s or something. And
that's cool.
WAMC, one of the local public radio stations, they have a second and third channel. I don't know if they have a third channel. They have at least a second channel where they have alternate programming on a second. And it's the same frequency, but it's a mm-hmm. different slice of it or a different...
Yeah, time slot. So they break it up into time slots now. So you look at every third time slot for your information. And then there's other different processes.
Time slot, you mean like the packets that come through with information only come one every... or so many every second. So there's room to get more per second in there too.
Exactly. And so, you know, you're looking at the first half of, you know, each second for your data. And the other person's looking at the second half of each second for their data. And so, yeah, that's really crudely how it works, yeah. Yeah.
And have you been, as an engineer, have you been watching the federal government has been, and I suppose this is the same all over the world, but has been reallocating different parts of the frequency. Like I was just talking about the TV switched from analog to digital.
Yeah.
And has moved. Channel 6 audio used to be 87.7 FM, so you could hear the audio on the of channel 6 on some radios that could tune down. Now that's changed, and channel 6 is off a whole different part of the bandwidth to free up. And that old TV frequency is being used for this unlicensed Wi-Fi, or do you know how it's?
I'm not so much in the States. I don't know how they've divided up the spectrum. I mean, I have one of those charts at home, the big EMF spectrum, so I don't mess with anybody when I'm doing my stuff. But off the top of my head, because they have done a lot of rearranging the U.S. In other parts of the world, it's not as crucial because they just don't have the infrastructure. Like Africa, you know, different parts of Africa, it's just kind of the Wild West still, and there, you know, there are parts that you're not supposed to broadcast on, but there's not a strong regulatory, you know, system. If I'm making a device for Africa, you don't have to go through the FCC kind of thing, but if you get a device here, it's, you know,
anything that uses transmitter has to get a little stamp on it that says it's FCC approved.
Yeah, exactly. And here it's 45,000 just straight off to
get that approval.
Yeah, to go through the process. And so in the States it's much more expensive developing and doing R&D for these devices because everybody has their they own the airwaves here. Everything is taken up to
it's
to
much
the,
more proprietary and capitalist system, I guess, than a collectivist system of transmission, and the African airwaves are more collectivist. Is that?
Yeah, it depends on the government, but it's also a use-based thing where, you know, they don't have you know, our airwaves are cluttered because we've have, you know, I mean, you know better than me, but, you know, the 60 years of really strong transmissions or, you know.
The last 5 or 10 years, just how many products have come through that have a, that transmit something somewhere, you know?
Yeah, that's the other thing. Everything's, you know, it, not even communications or telephones, but yeah, home use with
garage door openers, baby monitors, the key to your car, I guess, is a transmitter on a free, it has to be on some frequency.
Yeah.
All your computers have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, and that's all frequencies. And
exactly, yeah. But I find in Africa, the parts that I'm really interested in, mesh networks. So networks that you can basically do micro broadcasts that can link up over distance to transmit information. And there's something called WiMAX or
WiMAX is coming.
I'm spacing on it. It's they allocated a different bandwidth and it's WiMAX. I was just messing around with the module, but it's at a lower frequency, has a larger range, lower power, and it's easier to set up kind of remote stations and so forth. And there's also another thing called OpenBTS, which is a open software for software radio, which is really really neat stuff. And you can actually make your own individual cell networks or cell stations with that. And we had been experimenting with it and making a couple low-powered cell networks. And so you can actually build your own little cell network in the area. But, you know, if AT&T gets wind or whoever the major carrier is, they don't like you doing that. But these technologies, you can, you know, it is possible. You don't need a large AT&T carrier. It could be, you know, from kind of the ground up, but it's just the way that it's been implemented in the States.
And in other countries, that happens in local communities that want service, and they come up with some interesting way like this that you're talking about. Instead of here, there's no towns are not coming up with ways to go to get around AT&T. They're just paying AT&T. Or...
Exactly. Yeah. There's some really interesting initiatives in Africa and different places in India too, where they're making these local mesh communication systems. So if they don't have receptions, it hops from, you know, town to town basically. There's a couple of really interesting projects out there. Yeah. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, that should bring us back to Will of the Wisp, and if you just joined us, we're talking to Justin Downs. I'm Tom Rowe, and this is a Saturday afternoon show on WGXC. And we're talking to Justin Downs, who's been here at the Wavefarm Study Center in Accra all this week, working on his Will of the Wisps installation. And I guess tell us what that is.
And so that is, I mean, that refers back to what I was talking about in the interest. They're small little modules. And each of them are solar powered, so you can pick them up and kind of put them anywhere. And they're mesh networked, so they talk to each other. And what they collectively do is kind of recreate a prairie dog colony effect, where one module will be sensing its immediate environment, and if somebody walks near, it puts off a RF signal to the others to ask them to make noise, and they make noise. And right now what I'm doing is redoing them so they'll have a little FM transmitter, and they'll broadcast out your station. And so when somebody walks near one module, the other modules will start transmitting noise, and then when they walk over to there, then the other ones will start making noise.
What is the song that... Lord Sailors in the Mediterranean in mythical times.
The Siren Song?
Siren Song. It's kind of
Exactly. But I biked to where, and I biked across the U.S. and going through, I think it was Nebraska or North Dakota. There's just these prairie dog colonies that go on forever, and that's what they do. And you know, they really do get you, and that is, you know, a great example of kind of collective mesh behavior.
As you're riding along on your bike, that affects the groundhogs scurry and that makes another groundhog scurry and makes another.
Is that or you'll get one groundhog that's far away that'll start calling and make a lot of noise and get your attention, and the other groundhogs that are close to you will take off. And then when you move farther away, they just know, you know, they don't have a central, you know, kind of database where they say, okay, you make a noise now, you don't. It works out through their, you know, small programming in their brains that they're able to do a really good predator aversion technique through just, you know, calling when the predator is far enough away that they can't get hurt, you know, and it gives the rest of the chance for the other prairie dogs to run away. And I was enthralled by that system, and I like building that kind of redundancy into my own work and my own engineering, where each module can function on its own, you know, and if it drops in and out or gets eaten in that case, the whole system doesn't fall apart. Yeah.
And if you want to see what Justin's prairie dogs look like, there's a photo on the WGXC website and the Free 103.9 websites too. You made them, they're supposed to look a little like prairie dogs?
Yeah, or creatures. Yeah. Creatures. I wanted to make them into creatures, yeah.
And does that... I guess that plays into the idea too, that it's something that draws you toward it, since most people like friendly looking creatures, because they are friendly looking creatures.
They're they are.
They're not scary. Yeah, I guess you could do a night version that, but the solar wouldn't work with that if it was a scary night version of this.
No, that's true. I could store during the day and then have it at night, but you know, we also don't want people prowling around here.
Chasing after noises at night. Yes.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that's a lawsuit.
And so you're just about finishing up. This is going to be, these will be on display when Wave Farm opens this summer to the public. I think July, I think it's going to be officially open every Saturday, so people will be able to come, and they'll be somewhere near their cars when they get out, and lure them into the woods or out in by the ponds or the fields or something. Is that how they'll work?
Yes. That is how it will be. But it has to be a sunny day. If it's too overcast, they won't have enough energy to
so today,
get
for
going.
Instance, wasn't a...
No, today was not a stellar day. They were all hibernating.
Yeah. So it is kind of a at this point, if they don't see their shadows, there is more winter to come.
Yes,
as far as they're concerned.
Yes, exactly. Yes, that's very good. That's very good. Yeah.
All right. I think that did we cover everything? Are you working on any other projects after this, or?
I'm not sure. I've been doing these tracking collars for animals in Africa, and I might get back into that. No major things on the near horizon. Yeah.
All right.
We'll see.
Well, thank you for helping to describe the Will of the Wisps that will be on display at Wave Farm this summer. All right. Thanks for helping us out on the afternoon show here.
Oh, thanks, Tom.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, Justin. We'll be back in just a few minutes.